President Raisi has devoted his second day of Pakistan visit to exploring the country's rich cultural heritage. Many believe that the Iranian president's trip will significantly contribute to boosting the bilateral trade and strengthening cultural relations between the two nations. Nasik Azmi, Lahore.
Dozens of organizations marched in Paris against Islamophobia and racism as Israel's attempted genocide and ethnic cleansing has caused increased state-sponsored repression against Europe's largest Muslim community. A main theme of the march was protecting children. Since October 7th, children as young as 10 years old have been charged with so-called apology for terrorism, while a child of 8 was falsely targeted for praying during recess. Scandals like those have many saying that non-white children are no longer being treated like children, but instead like suspected fanatics, delinquents, and full-grown adults.
We Muslims are enduring so much Islamophobia these days, and it's not like there wasn't a lot of Islamophobia in France already. The targeting of our children is a step too far, and it's incredible that they have taken this shameful step.
As France is accused of targeting Muslim children at home, their elite are giving military and political cover to Israel's mass murder in Gaza of an estimated 15,000 children and the orphaning of some 20,000 others.
On les bombarde.
It's totally unjust how we are watching murder, torture, and the bombing of embassies, and nobody is allowed to say anything. We're here to say, stop the violence against Palestinian and Iranian people.
A decade ago, during another Israeli invasion of Gaza, France became the first country to ever ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations for a month after the counterattack by Hamas on October 7th, handing out hundreds of thousands of euros in fines and making mass arrests. Police initially banned this march, claiming it was a threat to public order and possibly anti-Semitic. That was overturned at the last moment, but many say the effort is proof of a long-running double standard against non-whites and non-Jews.
C'est des antisémites. Ça, c'est n'importe quoi.
Anytime there is a march about Palestine or Islamophobia, the interior minister in whatever administration seeks to ban it. The idea that we are anti-Semitic is total nonsense. I get the feeling that I'm more French than many others who aren't of Algerian descent as I am, because many have totally abandoned the longtime values of French political culture.
Similar to during France's two-year state of emergency starting in November 2015, many have been shocked by the lack of outcry at this latest targeting of the Muslim community, despite perpetual bragging of being the alleged birthplace of human rights. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
After almost 3 days, the Israeli forces withdrew from the refugee camp of Nur Shams near the city of Tul Karim in northern occupied West Bank. Only then paramedics were able to evacuate the martyrs' bodies and the families were able to count their dead. Over a dozen Palestinians have been killed since Thursday, but the number might be higher, as reports suggest that Israeli forces had confiscated the bodies of more martyrs. On Sunday, a comprehensive general strike was declared across the occupied West Bank to mourn Tul Karim martyrs. Scores of Palestinians also held a protest in the center of Ramallah against Israel's escalation and violence in Tul Karim and Nur Shams refugee camp.
Israel is expanding its genocide into the West Bank as well. And as we said before, there is no safe place for any Palestinian. And there has to be immediate Palestinian unity to stand up to this terrible aggression. And there has to be international boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign worldwide. And there has to be condemnation.
It's obvious that the Palestinian people, leadership and factions have to declare an immediate comprehensive popular uprising all over the Palestinian territories until the Israeli occupation ends. The ongoing war of attrition is no longer useful, but what's necessary is a national popular uprising.
The Israeli invasion has caused some of the worst destruction in the West Bank in decades. The occupation forces destroyed infrastructure, including sewage lines, shops, homes, and vehicles. Homes were turned into interrogation centers, and dozens of Palestinians were arrested. According to locals, heavy exchange of fire and clashes took place between resistance fighters and Israeli soldiers during the operation. The Israeli military admitted that at least 9 of its soldiers were wounded.
The Israeli occupation regime is escalating its violence against the Palestinian people. Its crimes are meant to exterminate the Palestinian people. In Gaza, genocide is being committed, and here in the West Bank, there are daily incursions, murders, collective punishment, and destruction everywhere. The Israeli occupation is doing its utmost to either bring Palestinians to their knees or commit more aggression and crimes against them.
Sunday's general strike paralyzed all aspects of life in the West Bank, with shops, schools, universities, and banks shuttered. But Palestinians question whether such a standstill is enough, expressing fear that once the Israeli military is done with Gaza, the occupied West Bank could be next. The Israeli military's violence against Palestinians is aimed at countering resistance, people here say. This is part of the Israeli crackdown on armed groups in the occupied West Bank. However, Palestinians say the Israeli crimes, including in the Nur Shams refugee camp, have failed to weaken their determination. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
A two-day international forum dubbed What Future for Palestine kicked off in Rome on Saturday. The initiative, organized by an opposition group called Front of Dissent, has been put together to tackle different topics, namely Zionism, its impact on Palestine and West Asia, the nature of Israel, what changes for the Palestinian resistance after October 7, West Asia in its transition to a multipolar world, and the risk of the Ukraine war escalating into a global conflict. The conference was attended by citizens who are very concerned about the turn the situation has taken in Western countries.
Today's forum is an important attempt to break down the wall of silence surrounding Zionist wrongdoings in West Asia. It is appalling how our mainstream media are covering Israel's brutal war in Gaza. They have created a parallel world and a parallel truth with the aim of covering up the bad things Israel is doing.
The superpowers that support Zionism are former colonial powers, most of them. And they had a role in creating Zionism in the first place. Many people allowed the Zionists to really empower themselves. So they were originally empowered by people who probably had a sense of guilt about the Holocaust, but eventually they became so powerful that they are able to control so many media outlets. They are able to control many politicians.
Speakers at the conference included former diplomats, politicians, journalists, and activists from several countries, including China, the US, Britain, Russia, and many others. Video links were also established with the spokesman for the worldwide anti-Zionist religious group, Neturei Karta International. Analysts at the conference are saying that the aftershocks of the Gaza crisis triggered by Israeli genocidal war are highly likely to reach far beyond West Asia and the Africa region, with the US credibility as a regional security guarantor shot to pieces. West Asia might see increased diplomatic engagement from China and Russia.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas Political Bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and a lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
"Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas Bureau and leaders as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option."
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
"Turkey is trying to play a very important role that is bigger than working on reaching a ceasefire in Gaza. It is rather solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and trying to reach a lasting solution. The 7th of October was a turning point to start working on reaching a lasting solution, and I think Turkey's role is a key for it, to maintain good relations with all sides."
Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, more than 70% of the fatalities of the brutal Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip are children and women. Likewise, according to reports issued by the Euro-Mediterranean Center for Human Rights, women and children in Gaza are enduring displacement, death, pain, and suffering in a way that the human mind cannot bear. More than 80% are living in tents without the minimum basic needs to live, without water, without food, with a chilling cold. The current situation is pushing them to the limit, making it impossible to focus on anything but survival.
"Today, innocent civilians are placed in inhumane conditions which do not possess the most basic requirements for human survival. When it comes to children and women, the suffering becomes more painful because women's needs are greater. Women today live in tents. There is no bathroom. There is no toilet. They cannot take care of themselves. They have to stand in long lines in front of men's bathrooms, and this means double suffering. Also, do not forget pregnant women or those who gave birth during the attack. We're talking about an aggression that affects all vital aspects."
Pregnant women and those who have given birth in the midst of war are one of the most affected groups. Similarly, the United Nations Population Fund estimated that since the beginning of the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip, approximately 60,000 women are pregnant, and of them, 5,500 would give birth soon, many of them by cesarean section. This means that terrible hospital sanitary conditions, as well as the food crisis, will endanger their lives and the lives of newborn babies.
"Pregnant women are suffering from extreme cold, food shortages and medicine shortages. We have noticed an increase in the rate of spontaneous abortions, an increase in the rate of premature births, and an increase in cases of small fetuses. Pregnant women leave the hospital about 10 hours after giving birth and go to the tents, where they have no means of living. Newborn babies are exposed to many diseases. We have observed that a large percentage of these women return to the hospital with their children who have caught a cold, and some have also died."
"The lack of hygiene and high levels of malnutrition experienced in overcrowded refugee camps are a poisonous mixture. According to the World Food Program, there's a high risk of famine, and cases of dehydration and malnutrition are increasing rapidly. Many mothers say they only eat once a day to survive. However, there are children who have stopped talking or eating because of what they have seen and experienced. Others cry and scream with every loud sound they hear. Months of war have traumatized an entire generation of children.
You see the atmosphere. Making bread is suffering. To go to the bathroom, you have to wait in line. To get water and foods, you also have to wait in line. That is, our entire life is suffering. In the tent where I live, there are approximately 8 people and my daughter, her husband, and her daughter as well. That is 13 people in just 9 square meters. We have to make the bread here, you see, and if we don't find cardboard to light the fire, we can't bake the bread. We only have 1 bottle of water a day and food. If they give us help, we eat, and if they don't give us food, no, because the price of goods is multiplied by 10.
The suffering we experience as children is that we have been forced out of our homes. Our houses were bombed when we were inside it. My friend, who was my cousin, has died. All my friends have died, and I have no one left. Our childhood has been stolen from us. I want to go back to my house. I want the war to end and return home so I can rest.
Gazans continue to call for Israel to fulfill its obligations under international humanitarian law, which begins with the protection of civilian lives. They assure that all they want is the end of this nightmare full of death and pain. Palestinian women have always been the symbol of the strong law of resistance. However, displacement, hunger, and lack of health care due to the Zionist war are disproportionately affecting women. They claim that even their dignity has been lost. And for that reason, they will never forget and they will take revenge for these violations and the misery they are in just because of the Zionist regime. Hoda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
On Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. And I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kavita Wade. The U.S. Israeli genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip may be taking a turn for the worse. The Israeli regime has announced that it may execute the attack on Rafah, where around 1.5 million Palestinians are taking shelter from Israeli bombs. Almost all analysts across the spectrum have said that there will be mass casualties if that takes place. Furthermore, Palestinians don't have a place to go. In this edition of the program, we will look at this genocide, which has just passed the 200-day mark, and examine how Israel may be stuck in a quagmire, failing militarily in this genocide. First, let me introduce our guests. Barbara Fantina, author and journalist, joins us from Kitchener. Also joining us is Fahima Mahomet, broadcaster and TV presenter from London. I'd like to welcome both of our guests, and I'll first start with you, Robert Fantina. So we are looking at an announcement that now has been made. It was just made a couple hours back. Israel has said that it's going to move ahead with this attack on Rafah, and we're looking, obviously, at what that may entail. Now, what's interesting about what they have said, first to get your reaction, is that we are going to work to spare Palestinian civilians there, the lives of Palestinian civilians. And the question comes about, why should we believe the Israeli regime when it says that it's going to work to do that when it hasn't done that in the past?
There is no reason to believe the Israeli regime. They have no intention of protecting the Palestinians. They have no desire to do so. They are trying to tell people to go to Al-Mawasi, which is a place that is ill-equipped to handle even the people who are there now. And people who are in the southern part of Gaza have no way of getting there, transporting themselves, their families, their any possessions they might still have, of getting there. Now, we also have to remember that Israel is saying it's going to work to protect civilians, but it considers any male over the age of 18 to be a, quote, terrorist. So they can just slaughter people indiscriminately and call them all terrorists. That's what they've been doing for the last 200 days. That's what they will continue to do. They have no regard for the human lives of the Palestinian people. They don't consider them humans, and they're treating them as such. What we're going to see if they do proceed with this invasion of Rafah is going to be a horrific bloodbath and slaughter that has made that will make the last 200 days that will exceed the horror of the last 200 days.
All right, Fahima, I'd also like to get your reaction on this, but in particular, when you take a look at some of the details, it is said that they're going to be moving population to the nearby city of Khan Yunis over a period of 2 to 3 weeks. That's one of the things they have said. It will then send troops into Rafah gradually, targeting areas where they claim that leaders of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas are residing in. The question then comes about, this means that any chance of a ceasefire agreement now is gone, that might as well kiss that goodbye, along with the possibility of the captives at this point in terms of any push for the Israeli regime to save them.
Absolutely, and I do agree with our guest as well, the fact that any sort of attack right now would be an absolute horror, especially with the given amount of over a million people gathered in that one particular area. And even if they were to move, we've just heard even recently that there's been mass graves in the area of Khan Yunis and others, and it's been reported that there is nowhere safe. And we cannot even guarantee that they are going to be moved safely in the time that Israel says that they are going to actually bombard that particular area in Rafah particularly. Also, it is an actual target and security alarm for even Egypt, as it is going to be quite close to their borders. And normally they do actually take sort of preempt planned sort of attacks whereby employing measures such as border patrols and surveillances and intelligence gathering and counterterrorism operations to mitigate security risks and maintain stability in the region. But now all of those things seems to be completely out of any sort of security, and they're violating any kind of security, as well as in the situation right now where there are absolutely no reason why Israel, that they, whatever they say, is going to actually remain where we can actually believe them. And we can't even see what the situation is in Palestine at the moment, in any area, because they still deny the journalists from outside to come in to report. And anything that Israel says is taken on board. So we have absolutely no clue as to what really is going on, how many people, maybe only decades later we're going to find out with regards to the numbers. And even what we know right now is probably going to be more than quadrupled than what we even know at this very moment in time, unfortunately.
Indeed. You know, it's very interesting. We're looking at, Robert Fantina, this package of military aid that the U.S. approved going to Ukraine, and then you have some going to Israel to the tune of $26 billion. When this was signed, the ink wasn't dry, and you had the U.S. President Joe Biden say, we're going to be sending missiles, along amongst other things, to Ukraine within hours. That was his thing. Now, we're looking at just the past couple hours where Israel has made this statement that it's going to invade Rafah. Do you get the feeling that this is just a coincidence, or that Israel was waiting for this to get approved, military equipment to be sent, and maybe serve as at least a basis for what seems to be an imminent invasion of Rafah?
Israel has delayed the invasion. They've been saying for several weeks that they're going to invade Rafah. It's just a matter of when. But now they have the weaponry to do it in a very, what they would consider a very effective way, killing tens of thousands of innocent people. And perhaps they didn't have all that weaponry before because they had used it on the first 34 or 35,000 Palestinians that they'd killed. It's also so hypocritical that the United States is sending aid to Ukraine and not to Gaza, when what Israel is doing to Gaza is astronomically more serious than what's happening in Ukraine. And yet Ukraine is getting all kinds of support, but for the Palestinians, the support the United States is sending is being sent to the perpetrator rather than to the victims. So I do think, yes, that this is timed. to coincide with receiving this weaponry from the United States.
When our guest there, Robert Fantino, when he was looking for the words as to what Israel was doing to the Gaza Strip, it's pretty much the reaction that many around the world not only have been having, but also had when they heard about these mass graves that were unveiled, not only in terms of the Al-Shifa Hospital, but also the Nasser Medical Complex, where another, I think, 20 or 30 bodies. Amongst the three massacres that involved hospitals, you remember the Al-Ahli one that was 500 plus, and Al-Shifa that are roughly amounted to about 400. And then you have the UN coming out, official that came out and said, we have to launch an investigation. What does that mean, launching an investigation? What do they need to see? I mean, there have been sightings of people who were blindfolded and executed, amongst them women and children.
Yes, there were reports to actually suggest that when those mass graves were actually investigated, they did find that the bodies were so there's no words for it, but you cannot actually identify them. But they were in a state where there were actually arms were actually, you know, tied up. So they were in a state where they weren't even, you know, probably given the kind of right to actually even defend themselves or be, you know, properly given that sort of state where they were under trial if they were supposedly, as the Israelis say, you know, either sort of like militants or militia or anything like that. So we would never really know. And the thing is, it is such a heightened conflict right now that even if you were to move anyone, right now they're not giving the aid for them where it cannot be reached. So to move them even further, which we know at that moment in time it's not reaching there, which is even harder, how are they even going to survive if they are going to move them further, you know, back to another sort of, you know, sort of place? So it doesn't make sense as to what they're doing, and they seem to believe everything that Israel is saying and just making up excuses, and it doesn't seem to make any sense to anyone outside. That's why we're getting such an uproar even from the universities in the USA, and it's just now where everyone is not believing. And we also see the disruption that's happening in Tel Aviv itself against Netanyahu. But even though we have so many of their own people that are, you know, fed up of what's going on, and they want, you know, to see much better sort of outcomes as to what's happening, we do need to realize that with the backing and the ally that Israel has, there is unfortunately going to continue with this destruction and this genocide and this continuous mass sort of murdering without consequences. Because as we know from the Iraq war, when, you know, even up till now, we're waiting for even international courts to even, you know, deem that to be sort of illegal. So this, again, is going to be something that unfortunately does not look like they will actually be held account.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
There have been mass movements on this in the form of protests, but in particular, our guest there touched on it, Robert Fantina, and those are student protests that we've seen erupt on college campuses. And it's quite interesting that you're having these Ivy League colleges actually be the ones that seem to be headlining it, you know, like Columbia or Harvard or Brown or Yale. And what's more interesting about this is that this has been going on for quite some time, actually. It broke out when the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood broke out. There were these protests, but this time I think it's different. First of all, you're looking at encampments, you know, these tents that are set up. It kind of reminds us of Zuccotti Park, if you remember, back in the Wall Street protest back then. But what do you think of these student protests? They want, basically, they're looking at a boycott type in terms of their charter, if you want to call it that, that they should cut ties with companies that make money that goes to Israel. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, many of these universities have financial ties with Israel, and the students are demanding, among other things, that those ties be cut because they violate the university's charters and their standards of human rights, and they want nothing to do with it. They don't want to benefit from any monies coming from Israel. They're also demanding a ceasefire, and the school administrators are not listening to them. Therefore, they've taken to these actions of these encampments, which are peaceful. They're legal because these are students, at least most of them. Some non-students have come onto campus occasionally, but most of them are students who are camping on university property. They're paying tuition to go there, and they have the right to be there. And these are expanding, as you mentioned, across the country. They're going to continue to expand. The school year is ending in just a few weeks for most of the students, but this isn't going to come to a close then. These students will be involved in Youth for Palestine movements in their communities, and then thanks to social media, they will be in contact with each other and with countless others who feel that the way they do. They will continue to work for justice for the Palestinians. That's what we're seeing now. It's a wonderful movement to see. It needs to expand. It needs to continue.
Yeah, and you know, one of the events that happened here, I don't know if you recall, it was back in November of last year, where there was the largest pro-Palestine protest in the U.S., where the destination was the White House. And I think there was over 250 groups that were involved. This was a mass mobilization, the biggest one that the U.S. has witnessed. If you combine that with the student protests that are taking place, do you agree with what one analyst said, that, you know, this is the younger generation? They don't think of Israel the way that the older generation did. It's a new ball game now, and they do not want the support that the U.S. is giving them, mainly due to the genocide taking place, but in particular because of the way they've treated Palestinians. Do you agree?
Absolutely, and that's why there's been the ban that has been approved for TikTok, because they know that how widespread social media is to actually get information out there. But regardless of that, we can now thank social media and sort of the digital platforms outside the mainstream and the propaganda media on the mainstream sort of channels. So people are much more aware of actually what's happening. And what amazingly has come out of this is that everyone has actually learned the true history and destruction over decades of what's been happening as Israel being the oppressor, the apartheid, and all of so many illegal, inhumane things that they have been getting away with for so many decades, that now people are totally awakened by this. And the new generation and the current generation is definitely not going to be quiet about this, because it affects their future, it affects their lives, and it affects their children. And, you know, that old mindset, and even the most powerful, maybe lobbyist groups, are really terrified, because when they speak and when they erupt as young as they are, it makes a difference to the future. So I think it's really powerful. It needs to continue. And even if these voices may not actually, you know, go into making differences in policies, but the fact that it's causing the disruption that it has, where the entire, even certain universities, have now actually stopped learning in the campus and actually going online, shows that it does, you know, make and serve some sort of movement to say that if we're not heard, then we are going to cause this disruption and cause some sort of discourse where we need to be seen and heard according to their normal human rights, because we're speaking up for the voiceless. And again, they're not going to accept the general and the normal rhetoric and narrative that has always been.
Well, talk about change. And this was something that was really, I don't know, it was really shocking to hear. And it was in the form of the U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. I don't know if you remember that, Robert Fantina, where he came out and he said, "I worry under his leadership, in reference to Netanyahu, Israel will become a pariah in the world and even in the U.S. Without American support, Israel's future could well be over." I mean, this kind of goes with the theme of our program tonight, where Israel is not only stuck in a quagmire, but the U.S. is helping it, and it's still stuck. But the point of view, the stance that he has You could never imagine that. I don't think you're in the States there, Robert. Something that U.S. politicians would say years ago, even what Chuck Schumer said.
Yes, it was. It would have been unheard of just a few years ago. Everything, the House of Representatives and the Senate walked lockstep in concert with whatever Israel wanted. Whatever it wanted, it got in terms of money. It could do no wrong. Israel was a sort of god to the United States. But as Schumer said, that Israel risks becoming a pariah state. Israel is a pariah state on the international stage. It was certainly an outlier prior to October 7th, but since this genocide has started, we've seen people around the world in massive, massive demonstrations against Israel, against the Israeli government. These are not anti-Semitic in any means. Criticism of Israel is not criticism of Jewish people or Jewishness, but we are seeing that the nation of Israel is a pariah on the world stage, as Schumer predicted, and it's not going to change unless the Israeli government changed its policies, which would be drastic, and there is no indication that's going to happen now. Netanyahu has said there will never be an independent Palestine on his watch. Biden vetoed the admission of Palestine into the United Nations as a full member just a week or so ago. So the United States and Israel are both pariah states, and they are showing that more and more as this genocide continues.
You know, when you take a look at Israel in terms of any achievements here, what are we looking at, Fahima? I mean, it's been 201 day at this point since Operation Al-Aqsa flood. There hasn't been any achievements on the ground in terms of the two ideals that they were after, goals, elimination of Hamas and the return of captives, except for the ceasefire that took place. And now they're looking at going after Rafah and invade there. They're saying that there are going to be Hamas leaders there. What if that fails, which then points to even a darker, perhaps, plan that they have, that this is all just a cover for trying to oust Palestinians from their homeland?
That's exactly that, and maybe we might not see it as a sort of like a success story with regards to the Israeli point of view, with them actually achieving anything, but actually they've destroyed the entire strip of Gaza. So at the end of the day, unfortunately, it is something that they have actually achieved, which is why they wanted that space for themselves. So even if people wanted to go back, they have no means of actually rebuilding again. So it would be up to them to actually take over. However, they sort of, put it into their own story as whether or not they're helping to rebuild, or again, putting on their own sort of like settlements like they have in the West Bank. And now they have complete control because they've actually destroyed everything. So it's not even inhabitable. So at the end of the day, we have to basically understand that regardless of what we see on the mainstream, there's definitely an agenda for them to actually take over. And they've actually done that. And there have been plans even before the 7th of October, which they have actually come across, where research has been said that, they wanted to strip down that entire area, have so much built on it, have the gases that, is from there. So there has been plans way before this, regardless if it was for that particular moment in time where it happened from October the 7th, but there's definitely been an idea where they need to take over that for themselves because of what lies underneath. So it may not be the success as in getting those hostages back from the rest of the world, and that's what it is, but they've definitely succeeded, unfortunately, in displacement, in breaking and destruction of the entire region, and where even if they were to come back, they've got nothing to come back to, and they've got no one fighting for the Palestinians around, even in the Arab world, to actually even give them any support, even with just the basic aid. So unfortunately, if it's not even them pulling back, they have the problems of, famine and so many other things that's going to come along with that.
Indeed. Well, I mean, you take a look at some Israeli officials, statements that they have made, Robert Fantina, the former major general Yitzhak Brick. Israel has lost his he calls it a war. We call it a genocidal war against Hamas in the Gaza Strip. You have the Israeli intel minister, days ago, he resigned. And you're having many analysts say that Israel has already lost strategically and operationally, which then puts into question what is their motive behind continuing with this genocide, and also put into question the U.S. military assistance given to Israel.
The motive is the destruction of the Palestinian people. Israel wants all of Palestine, wants to annex the entirety of Palestine. And the way it can do that is by killing the people of, killing them all or driving them into refugee camps in another country. The stated goals of defeating Hamas and releasing the prisoners. Well, the first one, you can't defeat an ideology. The people of Palestine, Gaza, West Bank, and everywhere else are going to continue to be opposed to the occupation, the brutal, repressive occupation, no matter whether that resistance is called Hamas or anything else. So that's not going to be defeated until there is a just solution to this horrific occupation. And as far as releasing the prisoners, if the Israeli government had been reasonable, and thinking of the Israeli government as ever being reasonable is just preposterous, but had it been reasonable, it could have established a ceasefire, a permanent ceasefire, which would have released all the hostages at that time. But that's not what Israel's interested. It's not interested in really defeating Hamas. It's not interested in getting back the hostages. It's interested in killing or expelling all the Palestinians and then taking complete control and annexing the Gaza Strip.
All right, I heard a timer there, and coincidentally, we're out of time ourselves here. So thank you for that. Robert Fantina, author and journalist from Kitchener. Thank you, Fahima Mohammed, broadcaster and TV presenter from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to the end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tawai and the team, it's goodbye.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
In the United States, President Joe Biden has condemned what he called anti-Semitic protests at many elite universities in the United States. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden on Monday, 22nd of April, weighed in on the pro-Palestine demonstrations taking place at elite university campuses in the United States. "I condemn the anti-Semitic protests," Mr. Biden told reporters after an Earth Day event in Northern Virginia on Monday, 22nd of April. "That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians." A reporter cut off the president's sentence before he could finish. More than 100 people have been arrested at Columbia University since pro-Palestine protesters began occupying the grounds last week. And police arrested 45 protesters at Yale University on Monday, 22nd of April, after the demonstrators repeatedly refused to vacate the plaza voluntarily. Protesters outside of New York University's Stern School of Business were also arrested on Monday night. Students at Yale and Columbia universities are calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and demanding their universities divest from companies connected to the Israeli regime. But some Jewish students at Columbia University say many of the chants are anti-Semitic, and they're concerned about their own safety. Similar protests have been taking place at other college campuses in the U.S., including at MIT, Boston University, Emerson College, and Tufts University. Other top Democrats, including Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, both of New York, have also criticized the demonstrations. Calls are growing for Columbia University's president, Nemat Minu Shafiq, to resign as Columbia goes fully remote in an effort to de-escalate the situation. The entire Republican Congressional New York delegation called for Shafiq's resignation on Monday, 22nd of April, accusing her of failing to keep students safe. The ongoing situation that has unfolded is a direct symptom of your continued lax enforcement of policy and clear double standards, the lawmakers wrote. Your failure to enforce the rules on campus has created an environment in which students and outside agitators know that they're able to operate with impunity and without any accountability. While the rot is systematic, the responsibility rests squarely on your shoulders. Republican Representative Mike Lawler of New York, who was just outside of Columbia University on Monday, said, "Everybody has a right to protest. They have the right to voice their opinion. The moment that you turn that into physical assaults or threats against others is the moment that you lose that right." Nemat Minu Shafiq testified before Congress for several hours last week, telling Congress, "Anti-Semitism has no place on our campus, and I'm personally committed to doing everything I can to confront it directly." Some Jewish congressional Democrats also went to Columbia's campus to offer their support for Jewish students. They did not echo the calls for Shafiq's resignation, but demanded the restoration of order within the university. Addressing his remarks to the university's administrators, Democratic Representative Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey said, "Stop the double talk and start acting now. Discipline harassers, restore civility on this campus, encourage peaceful, constructive dialogue." President Biden declined on Monday, 22nd of April, to weigh on Shafiq's fate. At the same Earth Day event, with President Biden, Progressive Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York cited the peaceful student-led protests at Columbia University and other campuses, highlighting how politically sensitive the politics are with respect to the Israeli-Hamas conflict. President Biden also condemned anti-Semitism at protests at university campuses in a written statement on Sunday night. "Silence is complicity," he said. "Even in recent days, when we've seen harassment and calls for violence against Jews, this blatant anti-Semitism is reprehensible and dangerous, and it has absolutely no place on college campuses or anywhere else in our country." Meanwhile, the Israeli regime has continued its near-daily raids on Rafah, a city in southern Gaza Strip, resulting in the deaths of many Palestinian civilians, including many children. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Biden on Monday, 22nd of April, said he condemns anti-Semitic protests amid escalating pro-Palestine demonstrations at Columbia University and on other U.S. college campuses. President Biden said, "I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians." President Biden was cut off by a journalist before he could complete his sentence. He was then asked if the Columbia University president should resign and replied, "I don't know that." Just before taking questions from reporters, Biden was talking with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat of New York, who has been an outspoken voice during the Israel-Hamas war and last month claimed Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. President Biden and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez were together in Virginia for a climate change event to mark Earth Day. The president's comments come as hundreds of students at Columbia University are occupying the center of university campus in protest. Students are being arrested and school president, Minu Shafiq, faces calls for her to resign. The protesters, who include Jewish students, are calling for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, and for the Biden administration to halt all military aid to Israel. Demonstrations have spread to other campuses in the United States, including New York University, Yale University, and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. The Biden administration denounced the protests on Sunday, calling them blatantly anti-Semitic and saying they were encouraging calls for violence. While every American has the right to peaceful protests, calls for violence and physical intimidation targeting Jewish students in the Jewish community are blatantly anti-Semitic, unconscionable, and dangerous. They have absolutely no place on any college campus or anywhere in the United States, the White House issued a statement.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.